Hello and welcome to Footlock. Whether you're watching this, the extended version on the audio podcast, or the shortened version where you get to see our lovely faces on YouTube, you're absolutely welcome. And yes, indeed, we do have an audio-only podcast version of this. You can find the Carfection for the Love of Cars podcast anywhere where you get podcasts. And if you're watching this on YouTube, remember to hit the bell icon to be notified. We already know that if you're watching this, you're one of our biggest fans, and thank you very much for being that. But if you subscribe to the channel and you hit the bell icon, you'll be notified every time we put out a new film. And as far as it makes your life more interesting with great car content, it makes our life slightly better by getting them out to more people. But long overdue already is the introduction of my Footlock friend, Mr. Henry Catchpole.
Yeah. Hello, how are you doing, Drew? Nice to have you back.
Yes, it's been a little bit, as you mentioned in the previous episode where I wasn't here, a bit sporadic. We've had the summer holidays, you've been cycling up and down mountains, presumably because you enjoy it. It doesn't sound like fun to me.
Partly because I enjoy it, partly because it's work as well.
Yes, Henry does write for the two-wheeled non-mechanical variety. I guess bikes are mechanical though, they just don't have
mechanical
engines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Bikes. Don't know much about them. They don't have an engine, so I don't care. But I went to a pool. I just sat by the pool in the sun getting I've actually got like second degree burns on my shoulders because I think I missed some bits.
I'm not going to rub after sun into
your
shoulders.
No.
It's not that sort of
it's beyond that. Really, you know that part where you get sun.
Okay, we don't need to know this. It's really, no. I feel we've gone too far already. It's this early and we're talking about your sunburn.
It's quite just because it's like medical grade injury. But anyway, as you've probably seen, if you are watching this on YouTube, and I'll have to describe it to you if you're listening to it on the podcast, sat in front of us here is a very lovely little
This whole thing. Oh,
hello. I'll bring it up to the microphone so you can actually hear it. That is an award given to us at the International Motor Film Festival for our Porsche GT3 Manuals Matter. I keep getting that the wrong way around. Manuals Matter film that Henry wrote and starred in and was shot by our very own George and Charlie and edited by Charlie, won in the best journalism category.
Yes, we did.
A round of applause to you for that. For me. yes, congratulations to the team, but congratulations to you guys. It's a great honor. It's second year in a row that you've won that award, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah.
Very impressive, actually. and we beat out some really, really strong competition. Definitely thought we were in with a shot this year with that film. We actually had two films up for nomination, the Manuals Matter film, which I mentioned, and our 812 Superfast film. Yeah, the shorter one of the two. Both, we'll put links to both in the description, and if you're watching us on YouTube, I'm sure you're seeing some clips right now. But both were fantastic films, but we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's worth mentioning again that Manuals Matter film, it was a fantastic piece of content. I mean, I loved watching it. I mean, I wasn't on location, but watching the team go out there and do it was a lot of fun. And it's a great representation of what Carfection can do when it's firing on all
cylinders. Yeah, it's a film that sort of, the nice thing is that, I mean, you guys have been very kind about it. And do you want to put that down so it doesn't... No.
You don't do it so softly now.
You're going to hear Drew, for the benefit of the podcast, Drew has just put a cup of coffee down without making a booming sound that apparently I did last week by tapping on the table.
Yeah, there's like a slight apology. I wasn't here to
admonish me.
Moderate Henry's table tapping. So if you were hearing a loud thudding noise during the episode, it was that. No, I've been a radio professional since I was 15, so I know how to put a coffee cup down.
Not been a radio professional since I was 15. Anyway, thank you very much for all the comments because people I've met as well have all said sort of that it really struck a chord. So I'm chuffed a bit. So it's just nice that people get it. Manuals do matter.
They do matter. thank you to everyone involved in the awards for giving it to us. There's quite a few judges involved.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of judges and a lot of really kind of impressive people there. So it's just an honor that they've watched our film. So that was really nice. And we beat Top Gear. They had a couple of films and also Car as well. So, the quality that we were up against is, humbling, is that the word? I think humbling. You meant to say at some point in the acceptance speeches. Humbling.
All of the films in that category, I think we would have been very happy to have turned in anything of that quality. And to have topped out the list is a great honour.
Should we put this behind us?
Yes, put it out of the way. We've been the festival itself has been running for about 4 years. I think that was the fourth one.
Fifth one, I think, yeah.
And we've put ourselves in for it every single time, and this is I believe someone's drilling into a wall nearby. We're just gonna have to make do with that, I'm afraid. Yeah, we've been nominated, I think, every single year it's been in there. Charlie, before he started working for us, won in the best student category, and Henry won last year with other people, and we're very glad that we've now brought one home for the team. So, yay us! but beyond the achievements of the past, we've got another packed episode. We'll be talking about the films that we have gone up on the site and the shoots that we've been having recently. We'll be talking about the motorsports, and we'll have a slightly more dramatic than usual long-termer update, which you hinted at in the last episode.
I forgot we were going to talk about that.
Yes. Yeah. But first, let's jump into the news.
Okay.
So, what do you have on the news docket for this week?
Well, it's curious because it's a bit of a slow sort of news period because we've got the Paris Motor Show coming up. So Paris and Frankfurt alternate years generally. Yep. There's always Geneva beginning of the year, and then it's always Paris or Frankfurt. This year it's Paris, but obviously the car manufacturers tend to kind of, I assume, sort of hoard their news a little bit, or their big reveals sort of in the lead up to it. So it's a bit of a slow news week, but one of the exciting things, I think, is this. Do you see the Integrale, the new recreation Integrale?
It feels like it's been the season for a lot of cars kind of getting, because we had you were talking about the DB5 in the last episode.
Yeah.
And Integrale is obviously one of those cars that really flares up the imagination of car people. I had seen some hints and some talking about it, but fill us in.
Yeah, just whisper it. The Integrale isn't a car that I like it. I don't have anything against it. I don't sort of, irrationally hate it, but this really, I can see the appeal in this. So it's by Automobili Amos, an Italian coach builder, and it's essentially, I suppose, a bit like a Singer 911 or a Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer, as you have to call them.
Resto mod, essentially.
Yeah, basically. So a lot of the panels have been replaced by carbon fiber panels. They've welded the rear doors shut. It's all beautifully trimmed inside. With some sort of tan-coloured Alcantara and the Recaro's seats and a bit more. It's just nicely done. I mean, it still looks identical to the other one, apart from bits of flashes of carbon fibre. The uprated engine puts out 330 brake horsepower. New intake system, uprated intercooler, improved exhaust, and a new engine loom, as somebody pointed out. So hopefully the electrical gremlins of the original might be overcome.
Well, this is it. The whole idea of these resto mods, and part of the reason why I think they're becoming increasingly more and more popular, is that it is so hard for engineers and designers to be able to make cars that look striking and bold because of safety regulations and efficiency, and we're all kind of figuring out what the fastest shapes are. But 20 or 30 years ago, there was a lot of freedom to design something kind of crazy out there. But they're unreliable, they're hard to come by in good condition. So being able to do this, we've seen it with, like you're saying, with the DB5 before, and we see it with the DB4 GT that Aston Martin are doing. There's handfuls of Porsche people doing it.
Eagle, obviously.
Eagle, Alphaholic, do the Alphaholics who do the Alfa Romeo rebuilds. It is almost going into a golden age of these kind of recreations, and having the Integrale on that list is very, very exciting indeed.
Yeah, they haven't given any sort of performance figures or anything for it yet. They're saving that. They said they just wanted to, get over the emotion and sort of fire up the imagination first. Although there's one inside, they've shown a picture. There's a button it's a red button with a rocket ship on it. A bit like the rocket, I think, from the light car company rocket on the front of that. They haven't said what that does yet, so I'm intrigued to know what that is.
Well, it's funny that you should bring up the light car company, which was obviously a company, it's almost like we planned that, which was
we didn't.
Which was Gordon Murray's company, Gordon Murray of Formula One and the McLaren F1 fame, who a couple of months ago, it may even been almost a year ago now, it feels like a long time ago, unveiled that his company is being reborn, and one of the key things that it's developing is a new form of manufacturing, the iStream Superlight.
Because he's been three versions of this iStream now, isn't he?
Yes,
the original one, then he did a carbon fiber one, and there's then this lightweight
new,
is the.
So what has been shown off this week, what the news element is that they've shown off the tub that uses this technology. So it all been theorized, the the actual material that it was going to be made of had been demonstrated to be strong, and that they were going to make the chassis. And TVR, the Griffith, which is going to be starting manufacturing next year, the is rebooting.
Is it?
It's TVR, so we never really know what's going to happen with TVR.
It's got a bit quiet on TVR front.
Well, they've only just shown off the construction of the tub.
I know. I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah, I'm sure.
I know people have put money down for one, so they've certainly got people's money. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, Gordon Murray's chassis uses a pressing that uses recycled carbon fiber, and
is the word honeycomb in there?
Honeycomb
somewhere?
Is in there. So instead of just having pressed panels, they're like two panels with like honeycomb in between. I may be completely oversimplifying it, but it makes it lighter, stronger, better for NVH, and far less prone to rust. These are all good things. And it's flexible enough, apparently, to be used in any kind of body style. The Griffith will be...
I think you mean adaptable, not flexible. Just to be clear on that.
Yes, it's actually the absolute opposite of flexible. It should be ultra rigid, but also affordable to make. The TVR Griffith is obviously kind of like a two-seat Super GT kind of car. Yeah. There is word that Gordon Murray might himself be producing something more along the lines of a two-seater roadster kind of thing on the same chassis. But from the look of the tub, the pictures that they've shown, it looks fairly adaptable to be any kind of two or even four-seat configuration. And the technology is available for sale to any manufacturer who wants to take it up. I imagine the wider industry wants to see at least one car out in the wild start to place any orders. But you can guarantee that anyone who can promise a lighter weight, stronger, and cheaper to manufacture a shell is going to be very, very interesting to all the major manufacturers, because, you know, lighter obviously means more fuel efficiency right there, and safer is always a good thing. We'll see... probably in the next 12 months, whether or not it comes to fruition. All the woes of TVR aside, I think everyone's quite eager to see them put a new car out there. So hopefully we'll see something from that very, very soon. But yeah, so Gordon Murray back in the world of working cars, which has been a while since we've seen. For a man in the 70s, he's been very productive right now.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I saw him actually. I was driving back to my parents and I saw him driving through Guildford, and he's bought an Alpine A110.
Really?
Yeah. And I happened to see it. I saw the car first, looked across, oh, it's Gordon.
I'd say that's one of the best endorsements that car can have. When someone, and he's quite picky in what he does and doesn't
quite,
like.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So for him to pick up that car, I think it fully endorses that brand.
Absolutely.
Alpine should maybe approach him for a more official thumbs up. right. What else do we have in the news docket?
There's been a few new 911 spy shots out there. So Porsche hasn't, officially said anything, but we've seen cars less and less disguised out there around the Nürburgring. So that looks like a 911, really?
Yes.
To be honest,
we're currently in the 991.2 generation. So will this be a development of that, or will this be a whole new?
No, this will be a whole new.
Generation.
This will be the 992, as people have been calling it. Whether it actually will be end up being called 992, I don't know. But
if anyone has deciphered Porsche's reason for calling them the numbers that they've associated with it, please let us know on Twitter at CarFection. We'd be very eager to find out, because I certainly don't have a clue.
The thing I like about the look of it, which looks very much, is you can see across the rear deck, it's now got full width rear wing or spoiler, which moves up and down. And when it's up, it looks real, because I always think the standard spoiler on a 911 just looks a bit.
There's been a long history of the spoilers on 911 looking various combinations of stuck on, erupting from the back.
When they move up, they just don't look very good. But this one now, I think, looks pretty cool.
So, and that's, for all intents and purposes, looks like it will be on the standard Carrera.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The other chat seems to be about obviously which variants we're going to get, and whether there's going to be a hybrid in the standard lineup or further up the range, or
a mid-engine
tool, or sort of. No, I don't think there's any talk of that at the moment. But the new GT3, people are sort of questioning, oh, is that going to go turbocharged? I've seen lots of chat about that. I can't see that whilst Preuninger is there, because he has always sworn that whilst he's there, there will be a naturally aspirated petrol GT3. So, but Never say never, I suppose.
No, if it's spy shot time now, we probably won't expect to see any official announcements for quite some time.
It'll probably turn up at Paris, won't it?
So. Yeah, so we'll see. Hopefully, if there's some news there. The thing is, even if it's shown up at Paris, they'll just call it the new 9/11. So yeah. We might still have to dig a bit deeper into what people like us actually refer to it as.
Yes.
But there you go.
Other news. Do you see the life-size Lego? We've got the...
Yes.
There. So is that, which has got, how many pieces that's got? Well, you built it. 3,599 piece.
Yeah.
Share on that you
and
built.
And that took a while.
And they've built one with over 1 million pieces that's actually full one-to-one scale, and Andy Wallace drove it.
Did he?
12 miles an hour down Aerolessen. Booking out Aerolessen for that, I mean, it's sort of, you know, nice, you know, thing to do, because obviously that's where the Sheeran sets its or Veyron has set its top speed runs, but 12 miles an hour at Aerolessen, I mean, that's the slowest anything's ever gone there, I think.
I imagine so, but that must be the single most uncomfortable thing to sit in the world. I mean, if you've ever sat on a Lego brick, it's not the most pleasant experience in the world.
Do you imagine he had pedals and you just put his foot on it, ow,
yeah,
ow. Ow, it's probably, I can get up to more than 12 miles an hour, because it was all you could sort of, you know, just gingy. Ow! And that was sort of as fast as you could go.
What powered it?
So actual Lego motors. So what are they called there? It had 2,304 Lego power function motors. And then over.
So it was electric?
Yeah.
An all electric Chiron.
Yeah.
There you go. The world's first electric Chiron.
Over 4,000 Lego Technic gear wheels in its transmission. So, yeah.
So it didn't actually have pistons and drivetrain,
did run,
which actually weirdly
had a removable steering wheel.
Weirdly, that makes the engine in the Lego Technic Chiron more accurate than the engine that's in the one that actually moved and was at one-to-one, because there are actually 16 cylinders in that with the drivetrain and a gearbox, and you can select forward and backwards. But still, that must have,
that's pretty cool. That's it had actual real Chiron wheels on it. I would have been quite cool if they'd done specific Lego. Given that Lego is the world's largest tire manufacturer, that would have been quite funny.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Because
it
makes so many little rubber tires. Okay.
There you go.
I guess it is. I never really thought of it. In the same way that McDonald's is the world's largest toy manufacturer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, for all its Happy Meals.
Yes, that's right. Mm, well. But yeah, so it had real... God, that must have been the heaviest part of the car. Actual Chiron alloys and tires and wheels. Maybe it actually needed that as well, because all that Lego must have weighed quite a bit. If you then put all that weight on Lego
wheels. Apparently it weighed 1,500 kilos. So
that's not...
It's half a ton lighter than a standard, an actual Chiron.
Yes, but that's made of
metal.
The standard, like, this is
standard,
an option.
It's an option. If you would
it
like
weighed
your,
1,500
you can have the
kilos.
Bare carbon fiber option or the Lego option.
That's as much as a good sized car. So it only saved 500 kilos by making it out of plastic bricks as opposed to metal, which goes to show probably how light they've made the Chiron, because it's only 500 kilos heavier than if you'd made it out of lightweight plastic with no sense of rigidity. Oh God, can you imagine trying to, like, it would.
Don't try and imagine. No.
It's mind-boggling. Well, next time you speak to Andy Wallace, you might
need to
just
find out what it was actually like.
Get a dynamic comparison between the standard Chiron and the Lego Chiron to see exactly what the
I imagine it would be quite brief. But,
yes. Well, speaking of cars on tracks, this one going slightly quicker and hopefully not made of Lego. There have been attempts at and rumours of a mid-engine Corvette for the last 20-odd years plus. And there have been concepts. I think there was the CERV concept they did. They showed it off right around the time when, probably the early 90s actually, almost close to 30 years ago, the concepts that that Corvette had put out, things that going up against stuff like the NSX, like that kind of form factor around that time. But... it finally looks like it's going to be a reality, and the car has been in camo testing at the Nürburgring, which surely is an indication that it's very much on its way. Doesn't really look a huge amount like the standard Corvette, which obviously has a huge, like, long, front front engine rear wheel drive setup. Yeah, long bonnet, short rear overhang. This looks obviously more mid-engine supercar like, but we could actually get that, an actual mid-engined super sports car out of the USA, which is quite exciting in its own right. Yeah, the C7 Corvette, when that came in, was it 4 or 5 years ago, got me excited about Corvettes again. So this could really put Corvette in amongst some very interesting competition. So we'll be keeping track of that as it
comes interesting on. As it is, should they be doing it? Should you know, are there certain things that are sacrosanct, you know, that, you know, the way that the 911 is rear-engined, should the Corvette be this brutal front-engine rear-drive car?
Yeah, well, you say that the 911... Yes, 911 was rear-engined, is still rear-engined. All 911s should be rear-engined. That's fine. But then there's also the Cayman and the Boxster, which take a lot of the same principles and then put it in. Think of Corvette not as the Corvette, but think of Corvette as the brand. And you have the Stingray or the C7. That's the front-engine Corvette. And you have whatever this is going to be called as the mid-engine Corvette. It, as long as you don't think of Corvette as the actual model name, and you think of the C1, C2 as the...
I suppose that's what I'm getting at, though. Is the C7 going to be replaced by this mid-engined thing?
I don't think that you... For the... And Corvettes are an American car for an American audience. And as they're hard to get outside of the US in any... Especially because Chevrolet's pulled out of Europe entirely. The front-engine rear-wheel drive setup is far more... exactly what Americans want from a car. It's a great traditional way of putting power down. Mid-engine cars are for those Americans who have a lot more money, so I can imagine the price point will be higher, and who have been looking at McLarens and Ferraris and want that supercar feel. And American supercar with the Corvette name attached to it, that's ticks a lot of boxes for the higher
wealthy. Absolutely. No,
I think it's definitely something they should be doing. I think American engineering is far from the kind of the parody of itself it had been for a lot of the 20th century, where engines were 8 times the size of European equivalents and getting a fraction of the horsepower. Mm. They're getting much better. You know, the technologies are all being shared across the world, and this is the next step in that. And it won't be the realm of the smaller production houses who are doing these like one-off things, like the Hennessys of these of this world, who are taking
and hopefully they'll build rather more of them than Ford did the Ford GT sort of thing.
Well, exactly. So, with the Ford and the success of the GT, just the international renownedness of that car, forgetting obviously Ford is of course American.
Mm. Coming on to that, actually, so Ford, slightly scraping the barrel in terms of news, but like I said, there wasn't much. There was the Mach 1, which is they're going to be their all electric car. It's an SUV inspired by the Mustang.
I mean,
I'm kind of tempted just to leave it at that and just let people just let that wash over people.
If you're a fan of Mustangs, that must hurt to a certain degree. We've seen that before, where companies have taken these great names of the past and just kind of plopped it on things and go like, there you go. It's like having a Macan GTS. Named from the past, plucked, and then just given to cars that don't necessarily deserve it. But yeah, a Mach 1 Ford SUV. I just don't think that will please anyone. I don't think the people who are buying an SUV care about the Mach 1 heritage, and the people who care about the Mach 1 heritage aren't going to want to see that name on an SUV.
No. Anyway, there we go. Just so I drop that in there. Moving on to sport.
Yes, motorsport news. Motorsport, yeah. So we've been away for a couple of weeks, so we've missed a couple of races. You talked about the, was it the Belgian Grand Prix, you're talking about Spa, and since then we've also had the Italian Grand Prix.
We have, yes.
Which was fastest lap in F1 history for Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen qualified on pole, really, really excited. Couldn't quite make it stick for the finish, and Lewis Hamilton managed to extend his lead.
Much to the delight of the Italian crowd, obviously.
Most booed driver in history. I mean, if you're going to win anywhere as an Italian team, that's your place to do it. And to have Lewis Hamilton pip him at the post, 9 laps to go, is it's never going to please everyone there. But speaking of Kimi, that's kind of more what I wanted to talk about, because the driver lineup for 2019 is beginning to solidify. And I've actually had to go and print this off because it was, I'll definitely forget some. So the first big change was that was confirmed, I guess, was Red Bull. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't arbitrary what order it's in, but Red Bull, probably the most shocking to me, and I think probably to the wider F1 audience as well, is that Pierre Gasly is going to replace Danny Ricciardo at Red Bull because Danny Ricciardo decided not to re-sign. I think the offer was on the table.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
And as one of the most...
Because Ricciardo going to Renault.
Yeah, to Renault, who have quite openly said that they don't expect to be competitive for the next couple of years. Now, it's a team with pedigree. They last won the Drivers' Championship 2003?
Last good decision Alonso made in terms of which team to go to, basically.
Yes. So that's... But, you know, Renault have... You know, they're a rollercoaster ride of a team. They were at the top before. There's no reason why they can't come back again.
It smacks a bit of the Lewis Hamilton. What are you doing leaving McLaren and going to this Mercedes team that hasn't really... shown much, and look how that turned out. So you never know.
Turns out to have been quite a good decision.
Exactly.
After that.
Yeah.
Max Verstappen is obviously staying put. Yep. And Raikkonen is. We first heard that Charles Leclerc would be replacing. Was going to be signed at Ferrari. Wasn't confirmed that Kimi was going to leave. That now has been confirmed.
And Kimi found out at Monza.
He found out at Monza.
Yeah, it wasn't his decision to leave.
Did he find out during the race, or is it with nine laps to go?
Yeah.
By the way, Kimi, we're not going to re-sign you for next year. Oh, well, okay, foot off the gas. No, that seems to be.
Leave me alone. I'm going to Sauber.
Sauber, yeah.
Where he started his career.
Yes, which actually isn't Kimi the oldest driver on the grid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He raced against Jos Verstappen at the end of Jos's career, so he's both raced against. Junior and senior of the same family. At some point, that has to kind of ring a bell going, I've been doing this a long time, haven't I? He does not look his age. I still think he looks younger than I do. And I party a fraction of the amount that he has in his lifetime. I think that kind of Finnish stoic nature has kind of kept him...
Stoicism,
that's one. Stoic nature. But that has prevented him from smiling too much, which is... So he hasn't got as many laugh lines.
Perfect porcelain skin.
Yeah, that's maybe... keeping the aging process at bay. But Sauber are one of those teams that just kind of be somewhere at the back of the grid that you don't really pay too much attention
to. Yeah, done all right this year. Yeah. With Leclerc.
Ferrari
well
engines.
That car. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, but last year's Ferrari engine. So,
yeah.
But
he clearly just wants to still be in F1 and enjoys driving. I mean,
he might be a bit more relaxed back there. You can have a bit more fun, and anything that you do is far more noted than anything you fail to do at the front, as what happened in Italy. Force India has had its financial woes. Looks like it will be bought by Daddy Stroll.
Yeah, it has been.
Has been.
I think already.
And then all the contracts are kind of up in the air because obviously Lance Stroll, who hasn't been great, might move
hasn't been terrible either.
No,
he sort of. I think he took a lot of stick, didn't he?
Because it's presumed that he got the ride he did because of that as well. Yeah, but there are other drivers on the grid who've done the same. Obviously, Max wouldn't have got his seat without the connection to his dad. But hadn't really. If your dad owns the team, it seems very unlikely that you won't be racing for that team. But nothing's confirmed on that end. McLaren. Full check driver change.
Yep.
So out are Stoffel and Alonso who's retiring, who will presumably see crop up in something like IndyCar.
Yeah, it looks like
year.
He's going to IndyCar, doesn't it? It seems very unfair that Stoffel is
caught
out.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't help but feel that he's done it extraordinarily well all the way through the junior ranks. He's clearly a very, very talented driver. Alonso has this sort of, pretty sure Alonso has a certain way he wants a car set up, which is specific to him. It was always the way he got, he's very good at getting the best from cars. You remember early in the career, understeer that he had seemingly built into the cars, or found that was the best way to get the speed from them. You just think that McLaren has to have been built around what Alonso wanted. It's not going to have been, Stoffel, is there anything you'd particularly like? Oh, thanks for the input. Okay, we're going to go with what Alonso wants. So, and getting, we've seen it a lot in WRC this year, that actually the drivers, that sort of, you know, the principal drivers will get the cars set up pretty much for them, and other drivers, well, here you are, you've got to try and make it work for you. And there are different, you know, people have different driving styles. I remember Nish talking about sort of, you know, in the Le Mans, how the different drivers within the same team in the same car would get, you know, very, very close to the same lap time with completely different styles, to be honest, going into the corner, sort of, or, you know, where you chose to make up your time. So whether you were particularly good on the brakes going into the corner, or whether you carried more mid-corner speed, or whether you were particularly good on the exit.
Yeah.
And you just think that Stoffel deserves another chance, sort of, with another car that may suit him better. I mean, sure, fine, you have to be adaptable, but I can't help but think that Alonso potentially has a very particular style or way he wants a car to be, and that just might not have suited Stoffel.
Yeah, I mean, chalk Stoffel up as one of the victims of the way F1 works, I guess. There's been many over the years who've come close and who frankly have been given chances and haven't necessarily having the right chance at the right time with the right team. And maybe Stoffel is one of those. I know from what I've heard, he's very dedicated to getting better. Yeah. But unfortunately, he won't be doing that next year with McLaren, who instead are bringing on Lando Norris.
This is the big worry, because Lando's obviously, again, been, like Stoffel Vandoorne, fantastic on the way up. He's a very young guy. He's brilliant on social media. Follow him on Twitter. He's
active.
Very funny.
Really
funny. And but yeah, you worry that same might happen to him. Obviously, it's not the Alonso.
No.
Barrier there, so perhaps it won't.
But other driver is Carlos Sainz, who is coming across to McLaren. So it'll be an all-new McLaren. I mean, to be fair, the team can afford to experiment a bit more, because it's not like they're challenging anyone for any kind of win. Toro Rosso is still trying to fill its other gap. Brendan Hartley is staying put.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh, well, as far as we know. He hasn't signed yet, but I think he might
be delighted if he is, but
not the luckiest.
All the rumors were that he was not
the luckiest
halfway through
driver
this season.
In the world. So. Yeah. Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen staying at Haas. Danny Ricciardo obviously coming on with Nico Hülkenberg at Renault, and Kimi Räikkönen joining Marcus Ericsson at Sauber, which rounds off generally where we think there might still be a bit of shuffling around the fringes. But essentially, we're still going to be looking next year, in all likelihood, at Vettel, and because Mercedes obviously staying the same, we're going to see Lewis and Sebastian duking it out again next year.
And I had something the other day, so I think it's April 2013 was the last time a car other than a McLaren, Ferrari, or Red Bull won a Grand Prix. How depressing is that?
2013,
yeah.
over five years, and who was that?
I don't know. So long ago that nobody can remember.
Was it a Toro Rosso?
Probably, yes.
Well, we've got the 2021 rule changes coming in, but it now doesn't look like that's going to build in this, because the teams get a say as a kind of a hangover from the Bernie era. They're kind of not quite letting all the changes go through that Liberty would have wanted, so it's not going to be as radical a change to the lineup. So we're not as likely to see many more small companies coming and pop up from underneath. We have to see what change that is. But it looks like between the 2019 and the 2020 season that we might not necessarily see that much changing around the top two or three teams.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. And hopefully that will change in the long run. But for now, that's where we are. Was there anything outside of Formula One on the motorsport side? We've been on the...
Well, I was going to quickly say, because we've heard today or yesterday that Sky is going to allow Channel 4 to broadcast the British Grand Prix and then highlights from the other Grand Prix on Channel 4, because previously, I think next year, we were going to be purely behind a paywall for F1 coverage, which would have been disastrous, frankly, I'd have thought. So it's very good news that that's happening. However, I've come up with a solution, because, frankly, much as I like F1 sort of more historically than anything else, best racing I've seen in a long time was the Goodwood Revival.
Right, yes. And you attended the Revival.
I did, yes. But in fact, the best race I saw was I went on the Saturday, And when I was home on the Sunday, I watched the live feed, and the very last race of the weekend was fantastic. It was basically Phil Keane in a listed Jaguar Nobbly.
That's
on
the
pole.
British sounding name for a car,
yeah,
isn't
it? That's great, isn't it? we ought to try some of the new listers, actually, because they look quite good, don't
they? Yeah.
But he started from the pit lane. He was on pole, went around green frag lap and flag lap. And he had a sticking throttle, wheeled back in the pit lane, did another green flag lap. And then he set off at the back and came through to win, basically. But you didn't sort of see that until about halfway through the race. You were watching the battles at the front, and then you suddenly realised, hang on a minute, he's gaining on. Could he do this? And he duly did. But just watching the cars moving around, the racing that's going
at
on.
Speed,
the
proper wheel
battles.
To wheel, yeah.
Yeah. But just seeing the drivers working, seeing the cars moving, seeing different sorts of cars being hustled in different sorts of ways was fantastic and brilliant. And you don't really care that the speed might not be, it's a fraction of what an F1 car's got. I don't care. It really doesn't matter. And then you watch things like you see really good performances, sort of people outperforming potentially or cars outperforming what they should do. So you saw the Scuderia Bear, the DK Engineering GT40, up where it shouldn't have been, and being driven extremely quickly by James Cottingham. That was brilliant. And what a fantastic weekend of racing. I hadn't been there for 10 years. I went to the original revival 20 years ago, and then subsequently sort of a few after that. And it was lovely going back and actually sort of, yes, it's become more commercialised and that sort of thing, but it's still an amazing thing to walk into and just see this sort of film set like atmosphere that they've created. So
were you dressed up?
I was, yes, absolutely. I dressed up for that very first year as well, when they sort of said we're encouraging people to, and we turned up sort of, I went with my parents, and it's just a case of putting a blazer and a flat cap on or something like that. But you sort of went there thinking, oh, it's going to be really awkward, sort of, everyone's been to a fancy dress party and sort of had that moment of questioning doubt as you're sitting on the tube or in the car going, it was fancy dress, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As you look down at your Hawaiian skirt and sort of think, this sounds like it's a literal example
of your life.
Well, actually, no, because I did, it was a trick that we played on a flatmate at university and told them a party was fancy dress and it was Hawaiian themed, and gave him a Hawaiian skirt, and then he rocked up to the party that was black tie in a Hawaiian skirt.
Wow, you're that guy.
Yeah, sorry Simon. Still sorry. He didn't take it as well as we thought he might.
I'm completely in Simon's camp for that one. Team Simon.
We were students, for crying out loud. But anyway, yes, I did dress up, so I had had some tweed on, and we'll probably put a photo up if people want to see what.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
And a bow tie.
Were there fairly eccentric people who went all out?
Oh yes, yeah, quite a lot of people go. Well, and this is the thing. It's my parents, who, my mother actually went to the last one of the very last Goodwood meetings when it was back in the 60s, and they sort of said it's over the years, obviously, become people are wearing. It's become fancy dress, and people wear nothing like the sort of clothes that would actually have been worn to a race meeting back in the day. But it's sort of completely over the top, but equally it's wonderful to see.
So. Nostalgia does that. It kind of changes your memory of how things were.
Yeah. So anyway, I figure the next year I'm just going to save up all the races and hopefully sort of find, there must be sort of the live feed was obviously recorded and was very, very good actually from the weekend. Apart from showing replays of accidents before you've seen the driver get out of the car, which I don't like and think they shouldn't have done. Hopefully find those. The races I didn't manage to see, I'd like to sort of just save them up and sort of drip feed them through the year so I can get to watch some more instead of watching F1.
Motorsport doesn't have to be the cutting edge of engineering. It could also be a page from yesteryear and some genuinely exciting wheel-to-wheel with, frankly, cars that are just as expensive as in some cases as a brand new Formula One car. Yeah. Was there anything on the rally front?
Rally front, we've got Turkey this weekend, which is going to be a very, very rough rally. Everyone's having to make new notes for that, so that will be interesting to see. We don't know what's happening next year really with Ogier, whether he's going to stay where he is at Ford, or whether Citroën's still trying to woo him, or what different things that may throw up. So I think Latvala is out of contract as well, so whether he'll stay at Toyota or not, I don't know. But there could be a few sort of movements around around that, and whether Meek is going to sort of reappear potentially in another team. That's obviously something that could happen, because he's still a top flight driver that some teams could probably do with, really. So yeah, nothing sort of much to update, but it's interesting coming into this fairly busy last half of the last section of the season.
Yeah,
and three drivers still in contention, so yeah,
exciting times ahead. Right now, exciting times on the channel as well, as we've got quite a lot of stuff coming up. Shoots that we've been on recently. Now, you and Charlie have just come back from Hungary.
Yes.
Driving the McLaren 600LT. Now, that is under embargo for driving impressions.
Yep.
What can you tell us about the car?
I don't know.
It's the first time you've seen it in the metal.
It is,
yes. What did you think of it looks-wise?
You really like it, don't you?
I do. I saw it in the studio a couple of months ago and had it right next to a 675LT.
Mm.
And next to it, I found that the 675LT looked under-designed. Comparison.
Oh, okay, because I'm the opposite. I think the 675LT looks beautifully sort of clean and sort of pure, and I really like that look more than the slightly fussier look of the 600LT.
So it's subjective then, as to, like, it's definitely a change, and it's got, I just really like the sculpted rear half of it completely, and the new placement of the
and
the
you're
exhaust.
Allowed to
I'm allowed to, yes.
Yeah, top X exhausts.
Yeah,
they look cool,
which is great. It feels like that. It's almost like evolution. You know how you see like fish as like the eyes have come around the head at some point. It's like very slowly the exhausts are moving up. For a while they were always right at the middle, which, if you're going to film a McLaren, is right the worst place to have it, because they're pointing directly at your face if you're behind it filming it. But they've now gone up and on top. I think it looked really, really exciting, and to have the advancement of the LT name as almost like a performance sub-brand within McLaren is quite exciting as well. So now you can get excited about the sports series kind of twice around, and the super series twice around. So that I'm really excited of. We'll have the film and a write-up, which will be on the website, which you can find at carfection.com, on the 26th of September. Of this month, so not too long, 2 weeks or so less, up on the channel. Presumably quite a few people will be dropping their content on the same day, but you're going to want to watch ours, because, you know, it's the best. And find out then exactly what Henry thinks of the 600LT. But for now, I'm sure we can show a picture or two that we've had of the car on location, just to kind of whet your appetite. On the other end of the scale, you were looking at some Defenders earlier in the week as well.
Yes, yeah. So regular watchers or listeners to this might remember the Defender that we showed from ACH Classic, which was a sort of, almost, you described it as like a singer of Defenders, really.
Yeah, it's what it felt like, a really high quality back to scratch and rebuild up in the best possible, the car that Land Rover never could have made in the first place.
Exactly, yes. So we went up there, did a bit of a sort of film just looking around that car and the other things that they happen to have on site. But we then did a film also on something.
Sorry.
Is that your phone?
It was my phone.
You've been a radio professional since you're 15, right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah.
There were no mobile phones when I was 15. I'm that old.
Was it a pager going off then? Was it?
I definitely didn't even have a pager. There was a phone in the other room mounted to a wall, and that was our only form of communication,
anyway,
apart from the radio.
Back to the six-wheeled Defender fire engine.
That sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. How cool is that? So we, I've got to go out and drive that, and we've got Dave to talk us around it and just lift up all the lockers and look at the pump in the back and put the lights up and down and turn the lights on and stuff. So yeah, that was really good fun. So have a look at that, because I don't think you'll find that anywhere else.
That will be coming to the channel very, very soon. And you crammed in another film while you were there.
Oh, did, yes. Yeah, yes. We had a quick look at my Mark II Escort, which lives up there and should hopefully be... we've ordered up some parts for it and bits and bobs, and we'll try and get the electrics slightly more reliable. And yeah, there's various things that need doing to it, but I'm going to actually finally start hopefully getting it into some sort of order so that it can be rallied, and we'll hopefully do, if people are interested, then we'll do some films on that and how it progresses, and then when we go rallying it. So, yeah.
Well, we actually did get a question. We put, you're probably watching this on the Saturday or listening to the audio podcast on the Friday, and we're recording this on Thursday. I put out a Instagram story and put up a question where people asking for questions. And the first question we got in is when we're going to do a film on your escort. So if you are interested in seeing a series of films of the kind of the rebuild, development, and eventually the rallying of Henry's escort, please let us know.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, let us know in the comments below on YouTube if you're watching us there, or indeed get in touch with us on Twitter at Carfection. Drop us a note. It always helps us shape what we do if we know that you're interested in watching it. That is brilliant. Speaking of Instagram, let me just jump on quickly because we had a bunch of questions come in. I set out, people are actually responding to it. Any plans on having a meetup? Someone is asking.
A meetup.
I don't know if you really want to meet us in person. We might shatter the illusion that we're friendly people.
I'm very short in real life.
Yeah, we have them sat on 18 different phone books just to bring them up to this level. We might do. Will your new hair feature in the recent films, or is it a Footlock exclusive? I think you might be talking about my hair.
Yeah, my hair hasn't changed, so.
No, yours just gets slightly bushier and then it's restrained. This is basically what happens when I don't do anything to my hair.
No, you didn't get out of bed like that, surely.
Oh, no, I didn't get out of bed like that. I had a shower and washed my hair, and if it just dries, it just falls forward, and I just brushed it off my face. But we put questions like that up on our Instagram feed all the time. And if you follow our Instagram feed at Carfection Films, you can jump in and ask us questions as well. And it will help us shape the content that we do in the future.
I can't believe we talked about your sunburn and your hair on this podcast.
My channel, my rules.
Your train set.
Yes. We have some films coming up soon to the channel on Audis. I've been out driving the new Q8, and I also drove the A8. Mm-hmm. We took both of them out at night in London. I'm sure we can show you a shot from that, where we found a great location. We had a location that we wanted to film at in London, which would have had a great view of a kind of Canary Wharf from the background.
Oh, another one.
Yep. Yeah, from the south side of the river. And then it was locked. We couldn't get in. So we had to find another place. And we ended up finding a great location with a great view. And we got some stunning stills there as well, which we'll put up on the which are up on Instagram, but we'll show you here on the YouTube version as well. But because we were shooting at night, it got more and more kind of dodgy around that area. It was a fairly nice part of town, but the longer we stayed there, like, these cars started creeping up to where we were, and these guys were just sat in their car watching us film, and then they're just kind of like laughing kind of maniacally. And we were like, should we just wrap here and go somewhere else? And then we went into a McDonald's to grab a coffee, and it looks like they'd followed us into the car park, so it was getting a little bit hairy. Luckily, they got bored and drove off eventually, but yeah, sometimes say that's why I'm also slightly wary of meetups, because some of you might be crazy.
I can't believe you just called our watchers and listeners crazy.
I didn't call them crazy. I said there's a chance that some of them might be.
Probably no more than us. So.
Well, yeah. Indeed. So we've got that coming up, which should be fun. And coming very, very soon to the channel, we have the last two episodes of our series where we've been following Mike Channel. On his racing series, he took part in the GRDC Ginetta entry-level racing series for novices, people who've never raced before. And if you've been following the series from the beginning of the year, or we started filming at the beginning of the year, it's been quite a roller coaster, because he literally started on his first track day with us, putting his car in the wall at Castle Coombe. No one was injured, thankfully. A lot of damage to the car, though. And from that, we've now been through to his last race. I went and attended his last race weekend, which was a lot of fun. I'm not going to spoil it for you how it ends, but we now have the entire series caught on film. We've got the last couple of episodes coming out on that very, very soon. Were there any other shoots? Yes, you're Hurricane. How did I forget? Because I was on holiday and I wasn't there. We have another Lamborghini film in the can, so tell us all about it.
Well, it's the Huracan Performante Spider in bright yellow.
Of course, it's a Lamborghini.
Exactly. That's kind of
The premise.
That's the premise.
So you've driven the coupe version of the Performante, which set the record at the Nürburgring when it came out. It doesn't have the benefit that the McLaren supercars have of the tub being built around a convertible ready platform. So now we have a high performance version of a car that has now had to be re-engineered as a convertible.
Yes.
What does that end result give you?
I kind of don't want to give the film away because that's basically obviously pretty much the question,
the premise,
isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I can tell you it adds about 125 kilos to the car.
Yeah.
It is still pretty good to drive, actually. It's not a sort of a wobbly mess like some of the Ferraris can be or have been in the past. So, yeah, it still sounds great. You get the roof down.
What's the engine?
It's a V10. So, yeah, it's that.
It's a naturally aspirated
V10, which is...
God bless Lamborghini.
Indeed.
And their crazy, crazy engines. That will be coming to the channel very, very soon, and I'm reliably informed that it looks fantastic. In fact, was that the one where you almost got chased away by a farmer? Was that shoot?
No, well, we had a discussion with a farmer who turned up in his tractor, and we ended up, being able to use bits of his access road and stuff as well. So that was
Thank you to that farmer.
So,
very kind indeed.
So, yeah, and he showed us his sheep sheds as well.
If that's the price you had to pay for using his land, I think you got off lightly. now, it's not always about supercars. We also have our reliable long-termer, and you hinted at it in the last episode of Footlock, but you're going to fill in...
Yeah, because the long-termer was actually on our Lamborghini shoot. I did a little bit of behind-the-scenes footage with it, so you can probably see that now.
Excellent. And it has... Our Disco Sport has been a reliable companion on location for quite a while this year.
And somebody did ask actually in the comments below, because we did a roundup of the last 6 months sort of, which has been up on the channel, so you can have a look at that. And somebody said, has it been reliable? Because there are obviously lots of stories about JLRs not being particularly reliable. Mm. From what we can say from R1, it has been...
Really reliable.
There's been a couple of electrical glitches in terms of just like the way the infotainment very occasionally does something odd, but then resets itself, turn it off, turn it on again. It's been fine. And that's been it, isn't it?
No, and the only problems that we've had with it have been inflicted upon it.
Yes. So this was the, I mentioned it very last week. It had to go back to JLR because somebody ran into me on the M25. Yay, traffic slowing, traffic stops, I stopped, person behind me did not stop. I had enough time to look in the rearview mirror and see this car bearing down on me, and there was nowhere for me to go. So I will say it was a couple of things. A, the car stood up extremely well. I was able to actually drive it away from the car behind.
And it looked like you had backed into a post.
Yeah.
It did not look like it had been rear-ended at speed.
No. So that was extremely impressive. The sort of test it was the first road traffic accident I've ever been involved in. And it wasn't particularly nice, and not something I will care to repeat, frankly.
Yeah.
But I was very impressed with how the Disco Sport stood up to it. The other thing was, so rear end, bang, oof, sitting there. First thing you hear is, hello, sir, are you all right? Or no, hello, are you all right? I'm thinking, blimey, perhaps the impact was harder than I thought.
And the driver's in the car with you.
Yeah,
now,
quite. Yeah. And I was in the car on my own at that point. Do you require police, fire or ambulance? And it was the SOS thing
really?
In the car, which there's no reason, but it detects you've had an accident and automatically calls a service center somewhere, call center. And so I taught them for the next probably 20 minutes or whatever.
Really?
Whilst I was getting the car off the... motorway as well, saying exactly what it was.
And obviously, they've called directly into the car?
Called directly into the car, so it just comes through the speaker system. You don't have to do it. It's not reliant on your phone being in the car or anything either. You tell them exactly where it's taken place, where it's all is. And I thought that was very impressive, actually.
So you didn't have to call anyone else, the emergency services. It was all through that in-car system.
Yeah, all done that. So, yeah, that was very impressive.
And presumably all round no one was hurt.
No, everyone on any side. Be fine. So it was all, thankfully, yes.
Yeah, it's not a system that we ever really want to test in a car.
No.
Is the SOS system. And you see it fitted to most modern cars now. Mm. But it's nice to know that it it worked.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that came out of it was that, so when they took our long term back, they lent us the lower spec petrol version of our car, basically. So
it was petrol?
It was, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I think I had it for a couple of days, and I don't think I needed to fill up. But I probably still had it in my head that it was
sounds
diesel
like a good
anyway.
Job. No, it was yeah. So it was the lower spec petrol. So I think 230 brake horsepower, 290, and it was really good actually. So it's about 12, possibly £13,000 cheaper. So a good chunk cheaper than ours. And to be honest, didn't really sort of so. It's not as quick, fair enough.
Yeah.
But and the screen in the middle was smaller, but actually made more sense because you get the buttons down the side for the shortcuts as opposed to having to do everything through the screen. And the heated seat buttons down there that you think they're actually heated seat buttons in the lower spec one as well. And
what,
you get
what
smaller
is it
wheels.
On the Discovery Sport that we have?
So they're still heated seat buttons, but you press it and then you have to go up there to
do it on the screen.
So,
yeah.
It has slightly smaller wheels, so the rides actually felt slightly more in tune with the car, and yeah, to be honest, I thought that was quite sort of, it was nice knowing you don't have to spend the £50,000 of our top of the range one to actually still get a car that is very, very good and basically gives you everything that one gives you, I think. So doesn't look quite as good, admittedly, but
no, I did really like the red of our Disco, and I was very glad to see
you don't
it
get
back.
those front bumper sort of changes that you get on our one as well. But anyway, I just thought that was worth mentioning as well.
Well, there you go. As far as long-term testing is concerned, it now literally has been tested through its full range of capabilities, including those which we hope none of you ever have to. But it's nice to know that it handled it like a champ. If you have any ideas of kind of cars that you would like us to do long-term tests on, let us know. We'll see if we can get hold of one and not crash it. But no. Everything else about having it long-term, let us know on Twitter at Carfection or in the comments below on YouTube. But I think with that long-term update, I think it brought us to the end of the episode. Yep. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching this indeed on YouTube or if you're listening, thank you so much for being subscribed to the podcast. It's a very new thing for us. We're very grateful to have every single one of you. Twitter at Carfection, Instagram at Carfection Films for staying up to date with absolutely everything we do on a day-to-day basis. And remember to be subscribed to the YouTube channel and hit that bell icon. It really, really helps us keep you up to date and helps us build the channel and get the message out to as many people as possible. But without anything else to add, from me, it's goodbye and we'll see you next time.
Sure.